Livewire with Phil Richards.
Now, Backstage Press is the first book by seasoned music business veteran Harvey Lee, and he joins us now on Livewire. Right, so Harvey, welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
So, you've been in the industry for many years. How many years would that be, in fact?
Well, I was in music for about 20 years. I was in video games for 20 years, tech for 10 or 15 years. I'm showing my age now, aren't I? So I've been around the block in the marketing world for nearly 40 years across music, video games, and technical businesses as well. And now, guess what? I'm an author.
I know. You've got a great book out. What's the book called?
The book's called Backstage Pass. It's a business book that's far from conventional. And the premise of the book basically is it's a book of career lessons, career and life lessons wrapped around a true rock and roll story. It just so happens that that true rock and roll story is my story. And it's been getting a phenomenal and overwhelmingly positive reaction, which I'm delighted about.
And what was the inspiration behind this? This was obviously you working in the industry over the years in many different ways.
Yeah, so from a music point of view, you know, I started my music career as a fledgling roadie, you know, schlepping flight cases and doing long night drives for bands when I was really a teenager. But, you know, the journey is long. So it literally started off at the bottom. And, you know, the story of the book starts at school in the early 1980s, inspired by my contact with AC/DC as my inspiration, and starting from playing through to roadieing, through to, you know, going back to college to learning to be a sound engineer, all the way through to the business functions while I was on the road. And it was the introduction to the business functions, really, you know, being a tour manager, being a production manager, making things happen, working with contracts and promoters and people, that actually sparked my interest in the business side of music. And that propelled me, purely by accident, actually, into the marketing side. And I've been in the marketing side ever since.
Also, you're a musician. You're a bass guitarist, aren't you?
Well, I was. Yeah, I started off as a bass player. Do you know why I started off as a bass player? It only had four strings. It's going to be less of a challenge for someone with very little talent starting off. I thought, well, don't give myself a mountain to climb. Let's avoid the 12-string acoustic or even the 6-string electric. So I went for I started off singing, if you can call it singing, as that was the thing that came naturally to me or easiest. Then I went to bass guitar because it was just four strings. It was easy to pick up, or easier to pick up. But these days I don't play bass. I have a collection of guitars, and I actually knuckled down and taught myself how to play moderately well, I would say, quite a few years ago. But the bass was the instrument that I played in the early days when I was actually in the music industry. Bass was my instrument, you're absolutely right.
And we ought to just mention, for a brief moment, you played with Herman Hermits. That's the bass guitar.
I did, yeah. I was their roadie and their sort of tour manager, production manager, sound person for quite a few years, touring around Europe and the United States. Really from the age of sort of 18, 19. I was 19 the first time I went to the States and toured with them in the 80s, actually. And it was on that first tour, ironically, the bass player unfortunately had to fly home for a family funeral at short notice. And he was going to miss three gigs, and I got the tap on the shoulder and said, "Hey, you play bass, don't you?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah. You're on stage tomorrow night. You better learn the set." And it was an interesting challenge because it was one of those things. It's a bit like a movie, really. I was in the back of the tour van. I'm left-handed, so the bass had to get restrung upside down, a bit like Jimi Hendrix, but without the obvious talent, obviously. And so we restrung the bass in the back of the van. We had 2 hours to drop Paul off at the airport. We were listening to a desk tape on a Walkman on a cassette, and I'm writing out the chord sheets. And the next night, I was on stage as the bass player. But me, in those days, I had really long hair because I'm a rocker. So I had the gold lamé suit on, the long hair, playing with a bunch of middle-aged pop stars. And it was a phenomenal challenge. I played three shows with them. I always make the claim that I was Herman's Hermit's shortest-lived ever bass player. And I think that record still holds true, actually. I think three shows in 3 days is probably about as short as you can get.
It's astonishing that you could learn a set like that in such a short space of time. You must have been quite a musician still.
Well, I'm not sure that I'm quite the musician, but I think an awful lot of endeavour was poured into it. And, you know, failure wasn't an option. There was no plan B. And when you don't have a plan B, it's like you just have to, it's sink or swim. You just have to do it. And, you know, I'd been with the band for, you know, a good couple of years. We knew each other really well. And we'd been living in each other's pockets on these tours. And this was a 3-month tour of the US. And they were my friends. It's like you don't let your friends down when they come knocking. So we found a way to make it happen. It's kind of this, one of the themes of my career, is just find a way to make it happen. And so we did it in the most simple, most effective way. And yeah, it was really difficult. I'm not sure I could do it now, to be honest. But when you're 19, everything seems possible. Everything doesn't seem as much of a challenge as it is today. You just throw yourself into it, or certainly I did. And it was a phenomenal experience. I wouldn't like to have to do it again today. But it was one of those sort of marquee moments in my career, certainly with Herman's Hermits as the band, that earned me my spurs. You know, it was one of those things where the band went, yeah, okay, he's one of us. You know, he's, you know, you're in the inner circle kind of thing. And you have to earn the right. As with anything in life, you have to earn the right. And that was one of those moments. And, but yeah, I won't sugarcoat it. I was very relieved to not have to play a fourth show. It was just that I still wanted to focus on the business side and the front of house sound, which is kind of why I was there. But I was so pleased I was able to help the band out. I tell the full story in the book.
Does sound like a fantastic experience. Go on, tell us, did anything ever go wrong at all?
Go wrong where? I went wrong plenty of times. I would surmise that my career has been a story of searing highs and scorching lows. And not much in the middle. Well, plenty in the middle, but nothing notable to talk about. So, yeah, I mean, being ill on a tour bus on the side of a mountain in Norway, not being able to control yourself on the way to a gig after getting locked up in customs overnight in prison for not having the right paperwork. This is pre-EU, by the way. Not having the right paperwork. To other challenges like, you know, I moved to London in the early 90s managing a band. They signed, or they were about to sign, that a record deal. I moved house. I moved from Manchester, which is where I grew up, to London. And within 4 weeks, the deal crashed and was left without the veritable pot to do the veritable business in. You know, so there's so many examples where, you know, expectations have not been met, or they've been met with crushing blows. But that's just life, isn't it? You just have to. The thing about life and work and careers is that these things will happen to you, right? Terrible things will happen. Huge challenges will come. How you respond to them is really where the rubber hits the road. Not the fact that life happens, the fact that you just need to get up and get on with it. And I think one of the recurring themes in the book, Backstage Pass, is all of the highs. You know, being on the original launch team for the Xbox was probably one of the notable ones that I talk about in detail in the book, and all other ones, especially in the music industry, where it was defeat after defeat after defeat, but yet somehow seemed to manage to rescue a win out of it. And that's life in general, isn't it, Phil?
Absolutely. Right, and tell us a bit more about the book, Harvey. What will people get out of the book?
I think ultimately the book is a set of life and career lessons that will either inspire you and give you some actionable advice for your own career, whether you're just starting out in your career or you're stuck and you're lacking inspiration, or if you're a bit like me and you're sort of more towards the tail end and you're more towards going fishing than going to the office. It'll give you inspiration and actionable ideas and concepts for you to apply in life and in work. But because it's music related, the whole book is written in the narrative. So it's really written as a story. You play this. I'm the central character in the book, obviously, because it's a true story. It's 50% rock and roll. It's 50% business, 100% true. But one of the things readers will get out of the book is you become the central character. It's almost like you become me, and I transport you to this time. We start the book in 1980s Britain. For those who will remember 1980s Britain, it was a very different place than it is now. You know, from a principal point of view, from a cultural point of view, from a way that things work point of view, it's a very different place. And so I transport you to this time and place, an era that you may not be familiar with, but you play the journey, you play the story all the way through the book. You go through my story, you become the hero yourself, and then at the end of every chapter, you get these actionable insights and lessons in life and business at every chapter. And there's 23 chapters. Each chapter is only about 15-20 minutes long, so it's very readable. And then you get the lessons at every chapter. And people have told me it's really inspiring read. It's easy read. It's given them inspirational, actionable ideas for their own life and their own career. And I think one of the bits of feedback that I've had about the book is that how relatable it is, because it is real life. It's not theory. It actually happened. The stuff that's in the book, some of which is really quite unbelievable. Some things maybe we can't talk about on the radio. really quite unbelievable, but 100% true. The fact that it is true and it is real life makes it incredibly relatable as well. So when I say, you know, when I tell people, well, it's a business book, but it's very unconventional, that's basically what I mean. When I wrote the book, I had the decision to make, am I going to write a hardcore business book, you know, like a manual or a how-to or a marketing guide, or am I going to write a memoir? Well, this is kind of somewhere in between. So that makes it very unusual, but the reaction to the book has been phenomenal. I mean, it's won a few awards. I was on the BBC last week on Craig's show, which was phenomenal. And it's been reviewing phenomenally well as well. So I'm really delighted with the response to it. You know, people are really reacting so positively. And people have been very, very kind with their words. So I'm feeling quite blessed with this at the moment. I'm just pleased it's out.
What are you going to do next then?
Well, I'm on a bit of a media tour at the moment. I just set up myself as a marketing consultant and career coach, and I'm doing a lot of public speaking as well at the moment. Yeah, I have this 40-year career that I talk through in the book, and I feel like I have a lot to give. So rather than working for another company, I recently decided to go on my own and actually help bring through and coach and mentor the next generation of marketers and product marketers, and help them with their careers from a mentorship point of view, from a training point of view, but also help them breaking into the function of marketing as well, and career coaching, interview coaching, and fractional work as a CMO and as a product marketing leader too. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. I've just finished a little mini tour of talks in the States and in London as well. And I have a brand new talk called The Three Lessons That Xbox Taught the World. So these are the stories, the actionable insights from my career, because I was there, that I can sort of pull back the curtain on some of these real things that people just have no idea about. They've never really been spoken about before or written about. So being able to coach and bring the next generation of marketers through is a lot of fun. It's very rewarding, and that's something I'm going to focus on for the next year. And who knows, I might even write another book.
And the industry itself has changed beyond recognition, hasn't it, since those days that you mentioned at the beginning?
The music industry is unrecognizable compared to what it was in the 70s, 80s, 90s. I would even argue in the beginning of the 2000s. The shift, the format shift, has changed everything. So, and it really started when the internet in the mid-90s sort of became a thing. And by the end of the 90s and the beginning of the noughties, you know, the distribution ownership and the distribution of music, which was fundamentally owned by big corporations, was smashed to pieces. So they found their distribution and the ownership of that distribution, which obviously they monetized through CDs and retail outlets and so on and so forth, started to not exist anymore. And there was about a 10-year period in the music industry where it was all in flux. You'll remember when Napster was coming out, the early days of Spotify, where people didn't really know what it is. It was early adopters. There was lots of peer-to-peer file sharing, lots of piracy. The industry was fighting back. But you know what? Long story short, I think it was a case of after a period of time, if you can't beat them, join them from an industry point of view. And, you know, in the past 10 years, we've seen revenues reported through all the official organisations as, you know, back to where they are or possibly even higher for the companies. The distribution landscape's changed completely. It's all online. How we consume music is completely different. We've gone from ownership of these physical formats to access, which is I don't own anything, but I pay to access it over the internet. And that changed everything. But can you say it's better? Well, it's just different. It's a phenomenal thing for consumers, but it has changed, you know, the whole landscape of the attention economy has changed completely. So music plays a very different role in young people's lives today. When I was growing up, kind of music or sport were really the only two things that you would latch onto as a kid, as a teenager, as your passion. And for me, obviously, it was music and rock music, hard rock music. But these days, you know, you've got video games, you've got social media, there's so many other distractions. So this whole attention economy of being able to get somebody's time to focus on something didn't used to be an issue in, you know, back in the days. You know, I used to spend hours in my bedroom with vinyl records, reading the liner notes, reading books, going to concerts. My friends were into the same thing as well. It was a culture. It was a way of life. And that still exists, but it doesn't exist in the same way that it used to. And you'll probably remember that too. Maybe some of the listeners will remember that too. If you're 40 years or over, you'll definitely remember that. But now it's, you know, if you think about your own kids, teenagers now, it's video games, it's social media, it's all online. And socializing and culture for youth now is very different. And music has a different part to play in that. It's more of a background role for many, many people. It's not at the fore like it used to, which I think for me personally is a bit of a shame because it really shaped who I was and how I approach life. I do still see people who are into it as much as I was, and that makes me really happy. But it's not the default setting like it used to be.
Right, let's just find out how we get hold of the book next.
Right, so the book's out. It's Backstage Pass, a business book that's far from conventional, 50% rock and roll, 50% business, 100% true, written by me, Harvey Lee. You can find it at all good book retailers. So in the UK, it's available at Amazon, Waterstones, Blackwells, you name it, all online. And it's available worldwide through all great bookstores, all the usual suspects, out in the United States as well, Australia, South Africa, you name it.
Thank you very much for joining us on Livewire today, Harvey. It's been great chatting with you.
Thanks a lot, Phil. All the best.
Livewire is produced by Steve Osborne Media. Steve Osborne Media.